Good afternoon, everybody. I'm going to go ahead and start the session so we have time for the presenters to speak. Thank you for attending the Challenges and Strategies for Promoting Nutrition Among Immigrants. This is a session sponsored by the Food and Nutrition section. If any of you are not members, I welcome you to join. It's a very active section that's really involved in a lot of policy changes, as well as promoting the field of nutrition. We have four fabulous presenters with us today. I'll present to them, each of them individually. They'll each have about 15 minutes for their presentations, and then we're going to take questions immediately after each of the presentations. Our first presenter is Emily Chambers. Emily Chambers is an MPH student at Boston University in maternal and child health, and she has extensive international experience. She's going to talk to us today about supporting healthy feeding practices among Vietnamese families with young children.
Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for the introduction. I am presenting here today with the support of my collaborators, Emily Feinberg, Tan Mai Nguyen, and An Han Bui, and also with funding from the Blue Cross and Blue Shield Foundation in Massachusetts. I don't have any relationships to disclose. The issues of overweight among children in the U.S. have been discussed at length in this conference and elsewhere, but Asian Americans, the model minority, are often not considered to be a part of this trend. However, the model minority assumption was challenged in Boston when we started to see problems with overweight and underweight among Vietnamese Americans. Here is some data from the Women, Infants, and Children Supplemental Feeding Program, servicing Boston and Massachusetts' largest Vietnamese population, and we see a dual burden of underweight and overweight. This data was requested by healthcare providers in the community clinic after they observed both trends. Underweight is a particular problem for under one-year-olds, and interestingly, the overweight prevalence among Vietnamese 1 to 5-year-olds is slightly higher than that of African Americans in the same community. So with these trend observations and with the numbers that we saw, we also have concerns about other trends, such as the way that immigrant families tend to integrate American feeding practices over time, and the trends that are noted across the lifespan of African American children who are overweight, since Vietnamese children were experiencing overweight at the same prevalence as their African American peers. The setting for our project is in Dorchester neighborhood of Boston, Massachusetts, where the Vietnamese population is large. The Dorchester House Multi-Service Center, a local health center, initiated this project. The project goals were to improve health and service provider knowledge of feeding practices in Vietnamese American families and to improve support through these service points for feeding practices that reduce over and underweight prevalence in that population. Our objectives were to gain an understanding of how Vietnamese families view the feeding process, to define and establish some common vocabulary for use in communication about feeding practice between providers and families, and to basically describe what these families typically eat, whether it be traditional foods or integrated American foods. So our first step in the process was to organize an advisory board representing several perspectives. We wanted community, clinical, and academic perspectives on this board, and the partners included community-based organizations that you see here, which offered a valuable insight into the community and are well-respected for serving the Vietnamese. In addition, we have healthcare providers, service programs, and some support from the Boston University School of Public Health through maternal and child health fellowships. The project staff also included residents of the neighborhood and 2 Vietnamese Americans. The next step in the process was to understand more about what mothers and other caregivers, particularly grandmothers and daycare providers, were thinking about the feeding process. We conducted purposive sampling, drawing on contacts of the community-based advisory board, and the sample included women across the lifespan. All of them were mothers, most had low levels of educational attainment, like less than high school, and most did not work outside of the home. And we were specifically hoping to understand more about feeding progression, children's independence versus parental control in feeding, age-appropriate food preparation, and parental perceptions about eating and body image. We translated and transcribed and analyzed these interviews, And we found something that might seem a bit obvious, but basically that Vietnamese had differences from what health and service providers were expecting. And I'm going to explain a little more detail about that. In terms of feeding progression, there are familiar standards from WIC and Bright Futures, which most providers would think of. For example, at 6 months, WIC and Bright Futures both recommend introduction of single foods to let children experience new tastes and textures slowly. And at 24 months, Bright Futures talks about children eating less and controlling their food intake, while parental control is only for what is served on the table. But Vietnamese caregivers really push children to eat, and we'll discuss a few of their strategies a bit later. We also looked at findings around body image, which gave us more insight into some common terminology that health and service providers should be aware of in the Vietnamese community. This includes the use of words describing fatter children under 5 as firm or tight bodies, and a clear preference for heavier bodies on male children, although this is only acceptable up to a certain age, because even at preteen and teen ages, overweight is not considered acceptable in this community. We also got some interesting insights into feeding control and learned these terms for children's behavior. Lazy to eat was a word for children who were unengaged or had a low appetite for food in general. Picky eaters refused certain foods, and we have wondered about whether or not these children might also be suffering from dental caries, which is common in this community where we work. We also found out about bored eaters, which were described by their parents as those who would gladly take a food for a certain period of time and then become disinterested with that particular food. And as I mentioned earlier, women came up with strategies for control in the feeding relationships. This included using milk as a substitute for meals, often in large volumes, or force feeding. Force feeding was fairly common, and women mentioned using syringes filled with various soups and broths and injecting these into the children's mouths. They also reported a strategy that children had developed as a counter to their strategies, and that was to pocket the food in their cheeks and hold it there without swallowing. The results are that we decided to put all of this information together into tools that could be used by healthcare providers and service providers in our community, and this could improve the support for feeding practices that could decrease the prevalence of both over and underweight. And so we synthesized this information and drew out of the interviews conglomerate case study that focused on providers, which was called Lon's Story. We also synthesized and came up with a book that describes the foods and food preparation in Vietnamese homes in the area, what we eat to help us grow. We sometimes call it going to the market. And we also did a recording of two different stories of women in their own words. One of them, Thoa, is a mother, and she is also a WIC nutrition worker in our community. An is a babysitter. And these women told their stories as a voiceover with photographs, and we hopefully will have a bit of time to look at one of those stories. This is a sample page from Lon's Story, our case study. The text of the story is on the left, and it talks about a mother with two children who have different kinds of eating behavior. The right side of the book have links to specific issues that are raised in the text. This page is explaining the importance of Vietnamese rice porridge as a food for less than one-year-old children. And on it is also a box on the use of growth charts as a way for providers to talk with parents about healthy weight and growth. This is another sample page where we do more detailed discussion of the WIC and Bright Futures standards alongside what is considered standard for the Vietnamese mothers, and then questions and considerations for a provider to use as discussion points with a parent in a visit. The What We Eat to Help Us Grow book is kind of like Vietnamese cooking 101 for a healthcare provider. This page illustrates on the left recipes for first foods for babies and on the right first foods for toddlers. In other parts of this book, there are references to American foods that are commonly incorporated into family diets, and one of the foods that families often talked about was Doritos. I'm going to briefly share a bit of a digital story of the Vietnamese woman, Thoa, who works in a nutrition counseling at WIC, but who experienced a conflict of culture and appropriate feeding in her own family.
Before Before I had my son, I was working as a nutritionist for the week program. I couldn't understand why it is so hard for Vietnamese clients to follow suggestions when they came to our office and complained that their child was small, picky eater, and lazy to eat. After having my older son, who turned out to be a picky eater, I faced the same issues as those clients that I work with, even though my son was not small, but he's a very picky eater. Since day 3, he refused breast formula and barely drank any. My husband and I had to take turns to try feeding him regularly, even when he was sleeping and did not ask for it. In the Vietnamese culture, we associate healthy child as being tall, chunky, and good eater. This is especially true for children who were born in or came to the U.S. at a young age, because foods are abundant and rich in nutrients.
I'd love to show you the whole thing, but we don't have time. But that gives you some sense of what women themselves were saying. Last Wednesday, we presented these tools to service providers at Dorchester's Early Intervention Program, and we discovered that the knowledge of Vietnamese feeding practices changed some or a lot in most of the group that was there. And most people thought this information would contribute to their future work assignments or be relevant in their jobs. But there was at least some or a lot of new information in the tools that we gave to this group, and they work with this population regularly. So these were encouraging preliminary findings for us, since we're focused on improving provider competency. Of course, we still need continued evaluation of these tools and in a more rigorous way, but we are eager to learn whether or not these tools might be useful in other Vietnamese communities in the U.S. We are still doing more community presentations of this work around our own community and in social service organizations, as well as the WIC and Head Start programs. And we would like to invite you to visit our website coming this month, www.vietfamilyhealth.org, where you could find these materials online in online modules and also find out about ordering the print versions for yourselves. Thank you very much.
Opportunity or any member of your research team to really look at some of the feeding assessment tools, so parenting around feeding by Birch and others, and the extent to which you think those might be relevant for this community or if they seem not so relevant.
Yeah, I might let Emily Feinberg's our pediatric person. So. Thank you very much.